Welcome back, everyone, to this 31st episode of Guildcast. I'm your host, Sean, and with me again is Ruby.
Hey, how are you?
I'm pretty good. It's been another crazy week, wouldn't you say?
Oh my gosh, we were not bored.
No, we were not bored. I always love these when, you know, we get into the new year and it's like a new quarter and, you know, game companies are kind of, you know, they took a nice break for the winter holidays and then they come back and they're just ready to fire on all cylinders. You know, we get all this cool stuff. So, and ArenaNet was definitely doing that this week. I mean, we had a video, a retrospective video, which was a lot of fun. Not really new information or anything, but just a, you know, kind of catching us up on the last 10 years of ArenaNet, which is always cool. I love that kind of stuff. And then we had, you're going to give your impressions of the Edge of Destiny book?
Yes, and I promise not to spoil anyone.
There you go. I mean, we actually talked about that. We didn't know if we should do like we did for Ghosts of Ascalon and just have a spoilerific thing. I got a lot of feedback from that, and a lot of people said that they kind of felt left out, you know what I mean? Like they want to listen to every, and I can understand this, they want to listen to everything on the podcast, but they hate to have to press stop, you know what I mean?
Right.
And not listen to the rest.
Well, you know what I actually just thought of? Last Monday on Flameseeker Chronicles on Massively, I wrote a spoilerific review of the book, so there are your spoilers if you need them.
Yeah, you can always go and read that. I haven't read it either, so I actually don't want to hear spoilers either. So that's me telling you not to. So.
Well, you can't fire me from this. I'll do what I want.
That's true. Not yet.
Not yet.
So how has your week been? I mean, we had a pretty cool episode last time with the roundtable, and we had a lot of good response from that.
I loved the roundtable. I cannot wait to do it again at the beginning of next month.
Yeah, it was. I think it worked out really well. I mean, I think it worked well because those guys all knew each other, and it was, you know, we knew them. I've known Ryan for a long time, and it was kind of cool just because we already know each other. You know, we're kind of talking. I mean, we play Minecraft sometimes with Tiger Feet, and you know, yeah. We've known Loudon forever. I've known Loudon since probably only a couple months after I started the podcast, I think.
Oh wow!
So it's probably 2006, I'd say. It's probably when I first met Loudon. And I, of course, I've met him in person too at PAX. And so yeah, I mean, it was a nice little group there. We had a nice little.
Yeah, that was very, very awesome. And you know what though, I'm even looking forward to trying it with. I imagine our next group will be not as close knit and people that aren't as familiar with each other. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually really looking forward to seeing how all of those different opinions and voices come in together.
Yeah.
I think it'll be fun.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know. I mean, there are theories both ways. You know, you could say the people who all know each other can work out well because they know each other. But then on the other side of that, people who don't know each other can kind of, you know, throw out their ideas, I think, maybe easier. They don't have to worry about, like, friendships or, you know, whatever. I don't know.
It'll be a little more free form.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So, we have fun with that.
Yeah. So we'll see how that works. And we don't have a topic for that one yet, but we should do that probably by next episode so that we can give people an idea of what we want to do and, you know, get some people together for that. Because that takes a long time to coordinate, especially times when you get a couple people.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
So we'll see how that works out. So cool. Yeah, let's go ahead and first talk a little bit about this retrospective video.
Yeah.
And this, of course, it's a video that just came out, what, like yesterday or today?
2 days ago.
2 days ago, okay.
It's Friday, well, isn't it?
I don't know what day this is. I completely forget.
It's Friday.
Oh, okay. That's right. But what it is it's essentially like Mike O'Brien is, you know, since he's the head honcho now at ArenaNet, you know, they started out with the three guys. And the two of them left, Patrick Wyatt and Jeff Strain both left. Jeff went to go head Undead Studios, which is they're working on a zombie MMO. And then Patrick Wyatt went to go work for Enmas, who are working on Terra. So, you know, I don't know the circumstances there or anything, how that worked out. But it's a really cool story in this video because Mike O'Brien talks about how they started out in Patrick's living room, wasn't it, or something?
It was like his spare bedroom.
Yeah, and then they
that was their office.
they talked about how they moved to Seattle, and they essentially, you know, they said they had seven people in the beginning, and they worked out of Mike's living room. And I just think it's interesting. They go through and they interview, what was it, like 20 different ArenaNet employees.
Yeah.
And just, I always love anything that Colin Johansson says, because you know that part when he says he doesn't know who's around anymore, like he doesn't know who's who, and then they had like a little reenactment, which I thought was funny. Like he's reenacting his confusion when he sees people he doesn't know. He's just like, who's that? I don't know.
Yeah, but he said hi to the guy. I mean, he was very friendly, yeah. So that's cool.
Yeah, but it's a cool video because it kind of reaches over the whole 10 years of ArenaNet and how they got started, you know, what type of a company they are. I mean, they really push towards that whole getting out there and seeing the fans thing, and, you know, talking about, there's a lot of, I guess, like people said in the comments, there's a lot of, like, PR speak in there, but that's to be expected, I guess.
You know, I don't know. I guess there probably is some PR speak. But what I loved about this, even if it can be classified as PR speak, I don't think there was anything in there that those guys did not mean from the bottom of their hearts.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's, I mean, I don't think that was, I mean, I guess there are some people who, especially in the Massively comments, you know, people said that it's not genuine, or other people said, you know, hey, you guys really have your job cut out for you now. You know, you keep pimping the company and pimping the fact that this game is going to be so great, and it's like, you know, I guess from an outside perspective, and I say outside, like outside of this, of us being complete fanboys and girls, you know, people can look at this and say, wow, you know, they really are hyping this, and they just better deliver, you know. I think that's the big thing. But that's as far as this and like the whole manifesto video, mm-hmm. It's kind of, they kind of run together as just another thing where they're saying, hey, we are really awesome. And like, just wait, we're going to show you how awesome we are. You know, you think we're awesome now, just wait. It's, it's going to blow your mind. And that's kind of what this video is like. But at the same time, it's like a history lesson, which I love. I love that kind of stuff. So it's kind of cool.
Well, there's something about, and I think this is what, this is part of what makes it such a great game. And I know it's not launched yet, and I'm not necessarily only talking about ArenaNet, but I think this is such a component of making a really, really good game, is having a group of people that aren't just clocking in, picking up their paycheck, and going home at 4:59 and 59 seconds. I mean, these people want to be here so badly, mm-hmm. And I don't think you can have a really, really great game without a bunch of people just like that.
Yeah. And it's also cool to see a lot of the familiar faces in there. You know, they've made videos in the past, of course. They've made videos a long time ago. I mean, there was, in the Nightfall Collector's Edition, they had a video, like, the making of Nightfall. And you see a lot of the same familiar faces in this video as you did way back in Nightfall. What was that, 2006, I believe?
Six.
Seven, maybe? No, I think it was...
Factions was seven.
Yeah. So Nightfall was seven, late 2007. We're probably wrong on that. If we're wrong, I mean, it's late for us, right?
I know. I'm so tired.
We'll just blame it on our lack of sleep.
We at least know what order they came in.
Yeah. At this, maybe in an hour we won't. We'll probably forget. But
jeez.
So yeah, I think it's cool to see, you know, like Katie Hargrove on there and Isaiah Cartwright, and, you know, Colin Johansson. Like, you know, people who've been there for a long time. And kind of see, you know, how they're still there. They're still doing this, and it's still those parts of the team that are still making Guild Wars 2. So, yeah, I think...
And they're still just as excited after all this time.
Yeah, which is a good sign. So, yeah, I think I'll put a link to this in the show notes if anyone wants to check this out, if you haven't seen it already. It's a 15-minute video, so prepare yourself for that. You know, get a snack. Make sure you go to the bathroom before you... press play, all that kind of stuff, and but it's worth every second of it. You know, it's a really good video. And then on top of that, we have your impressions of Edge of Destiny. So let's get into that, so I can stop talking for a little bit.
Are you tired of talking?
No, I'm never tired of talking.
All right, well, I'm going to go get a snack. No. Edge of Destiny, you need to read it. I know. I mean, you've got so much spare time. I don't understand why you haven't sat down and picked this book up. So anyway, before you kill me, though, this is this actually introduces us to the individual members of Destiny's Edge and how they came together, because they were, and I'm going with basic plot points and not spoiling anything, but they were Destiny's Edge were they were two separate groups to start with, and it was such a cool story. We met them all individually at first, and got some really good insight into who each of them were and what their background was and what they did and what they were like, which I always get a kick out of that kind of thing. And then they formed into two separate groups, came together in battle, and wound up and came out of this battle as one force, I guess one guild. And that was a large part of the meat of the book. I mean, that was just that story. We got to know them really well. And I think it went a long way toward making us care about these people that we're going to have such a big part of in Guild Wars 2. And that was so impressive to me.
Now, was it written from the perspective of like each individual story in different chapters and then they came together, or how was it?
You know, now that you mention it, it switched back and forth between their individual stories, between their individual perspectives. It wasn't specifically chapter by chapter. But what interests me, and I'm just now realizing this, so I'm just now trying to figure out what the difference was. You and I have talked about this before with the Game of Thrones books.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hated that. I hate that so much. When I'm just into, I mean, I'm really getting into this chapter, and I'm really getting into this person's perspective, and all of a sudden, bam, I'm with someone else, and I'm going, wait a minute, I wasn't done with this person.
Well, yeah, I can see that. I also think of, like, The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand. You know, they brought each storyline together, even in a couple chapters, and then they would go to another person for a couple chapters. But I think that with something like that, it was easier because the characters are so different. I think in Game of Thrones, it's like you have this nonsensical name and then another nonsensical name, and there's no real anchor to kind of differentiate them, and you're like, wait, which one is this again? Like, you know, and I think, I don't know, I just, maybe it's just my reading style. I don't read, no. I don't pay attention, no.
Please.
What is it? What's the word?
ADD is yes. What you're after.
No, but you know what I'm saying? I think The Stand, I think Stephen King did it well, so that's why I was kind of at, that's actually what I had in mind when I was thinking that maybe that's what they did, kind of a Stephen King The Stand kind of a way.
Okay, well, now I have to find the similarities between the two, because I literally read The Stand so many times, my copy fell to pieces. I mean, seriously, I read that book that many times. But I'm just now realizing that that's what they did in Edge of Destiny. It didn't bother me at all.
Cool.
So there's something that was done differently there. But anyway, and we are so off track right now, and I kind of want to read The Stand. But let's finish this.
That's okay,
first.
I'll wait. I'll just press pause.
I don't read that fast. I read fast, but not that fast. But anyway, the advantage to that is that it really lets you get to know. I mean, we really got to know Zoja. We really got to know Logan. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't like a huge character introspective thing, but it was enough where you kind of felt for them. Yeah. And it made you care about these characters.
Cool.
This is where it gets difficult. How can I do this without spoiling? The book, the overall arc of the book is not happy. And it's setting us up, it goes a huge way towards setting us up for the storyline that we... this is hard. It goes a very long way towards setting us up for the storyline that we have to deal with in Guild Wars 2. I don't really feel like I can say anything else.
No, that's good. That's good. I think, we don't want to go too close to that line.
This is not a happy book. So it wasn't, you know, and we weren't expecting all happy, happy, joy, joy, or there wouldn't be a problem to fix in Guild Wars 2. So.
Yeah, that's very true. I mean, it's setting that mood, I think, is probably the biggest thing, right?
Yeah, and it does that beautifully. Mm-hmm. So this is one... I'm going to have to say I liked this better than Ghost of Ascalon.
Oh, okay. I know, didn't you say when you first started you didn't like it better?
Well, Ghost of Ascalon, I think when the first chapter was released before Ghost of Ascalon came out, you know, I read it online like the whole rest of the world. I didn't like that.
Oh, okay. That's right.
Just because they made the human character, he was like everybody's whipping boy.
Oh, that's
and
right.
And he was almost a buffoon.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody looked down on him. And I don't like having a character that you're forced to be sympathetic to because he gets beaten on by all the other characters.
Yeah.
Because I didn't feel like he deserved it. So I had a problem with that, but it worked out well. Once I got my hands on the entire book, it worked out well. So maybe that, I had kind of, before I ever read the book, I had a little bit of a bad taste. So maybe that has something to do with it.
Yeah.
But to me, Edge of Destiny has more potential for rereading it. And I like to reread books that I really, really love.
Yeah.
And I honestly, I pick up Ghosts of Ascalon every now and then, mostly to look at the signature from Jeff Grubb and make little squealy noises.
Rub it in.
Hey, I wanted you to go to PAX. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
I begged you to go to PAX.
Yeah.
And you said, I don't want to go there. I'd rather go to Dragon Con.
No, I said I'd rather pay about $200 to drive to Atlanta than $1,000.
Details.
Yeah.
Details. So anyway, it's Edge of Destiny. Overall, I think I preferred it. And that's high praise because I was crazy about Ghosts of Ascalon.
Yeah.
I devoured that in literally like 2 hours.
That's crazy. Remember, it took me like a week, and I was reading every single, editing posts on Massively, and I'm reading in the other hand.
You were like, weren't you like going to bed at night, and you would try so hard to read, and you'd get like a page, and then you'd fall asleep on the book?
Yeah, well, I do that anyway, yeah. Well, that's just a thing I have with reading. It's nothing to do with the book, but...
Yeah, I remember about Ghosts of Ascalon, after you finished it, you were like, well, I'm done with this, I don't know what to do with it, I guess I'll go down to Walmart, see if anybody coming out of the store wants it.
Yeah. Hey, anybody want this piece of paper, this jumble of paper?
So bad. That was mean. So
you know,
anyway.
You mentioned about the different stories and everything, and it reminded me in that retrospective video, I almost forgot about this, but there's that whole section where the employees go down the line and talk about what class they're going to play at launch.
That was cool.
And it's funny because it starts out where you get different people, they're saying, yeah, I'm going to play the Char, and then it's the next person, Char. And I remember watching that and thinking, oh, wow, like, they're all going to play Char. And then, of course, they go to other people and they say, you know, Savari or Norn. And they just go down the line. And some people are like, yeah, I don't want to play a human because that's what my Guild Wars 1 character was, you know. And
yeah.
And I think it's really cool how they go through it, but not only just playing, you know, what each person's going to or naming what each person's going to play, but also kind of a little explanation in there, which I think is always cool. So... It just reminds me of, like, with the book, you know, you go down the different storylines. So mm-hmm. Did they describe, like, did they get into detail about kind of the history of the races? Like, especially the Savari. Like, did they get into detail with that?
Not a lot of history, not straight history. The way they kind of, they gave a good sense of the surroundings and of the history mm-hmm. by having each character interact with others of their race.
Oh, okay.
And that was a big part of the introduction. Kaith, I don't think this is a spoiler. Kaith had interactions with a member of the Nightmare Court, mm-hmm. and there was a lot of history and a lot of, again, not direct explanation, but you got a very good feel for their interactions just by reading these two going back and forth.
Hmm.
Let's see, Logan. Well, okay. I can't say anything about Logan. see, and you're gonna have to cut out all of this. Me going, what can I say?
No way. I'm keeping all that in there.
Great. see, the Norn. Actually, the whole Norn part was very, very cool because Air is she's an artist. And again, this isn't a spoiler because it's like the first two pages of the book. I think everybody's already read it, actually. She's an artist. She works in stone and wood and carves the likeness of people that come and pay her for that. Hmm. And it was very, very cool seeing how she interacted with these people that came to her workshop, and just what their plans were and what they wanted and why they wanted it. And you got a sense, you got a great sense of the Norn community and the Norn society. That was the word I was looking for. You got such a good sense of their society and how it worked just from that. And there was no, there was no direct, this is how the Norn hierarchy works.
Yeah. Well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, because I know they're based on kind of, Viking mythology and sagas and things like that. The Vikings are always really big in sagas, which is, storytelling for the Vikings. So I think that that aspect of it, that characteristic has been carried over to the Norn. So it's cool that they kind of focused on that.
Yeah, it's extremely neat. And you know what? Overall, it was a matter of showing us rather than telling us, which to me makes for, that's what makes good storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was, I had, it just really painted a good picture. Mm-hmm. And they went down, they did that with every race, and you got such a good feel for it.
Cool. Yeah. That's good to hear. I'm looking forward to reading it and then, seeing what comes out of the third book, too.
I can't imagine where they'd go with the with the third book, and I have to stop talking now.
Because of how awesome it is, right?
Yes, and just so many spoilers wanting to come out of my mouth.
That's all right.
This is hard.
I know. Well, yeah, I should probably read it, and then we can both just sit there and talk about it on a big spoilerific show.
Yeah, the whole world needs to hurry up and read this thing, please.
Well, maybe sometime we could have a round table about it. Maybe I don't know. We'd have to wait a little while.
That needs to be a round table topic.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we need to do.
Anyway, so let's before we torture Ruby anymore with keeping her mouth shut.
That is torture for me, just across the board.
Let's go ahead and get into the emails here. We have quite a few once again.
So.
Let's see, this first one, this is from Sirius, and he puts, hi Sean, oh, no Ruby in there,
wow. Oh.
Says, my name is Sirius Forloy, in-game, and I have been listening to Guildcast for years. I think the first episodes I listened to was the interview with Gail Gray, and then most of them previously and after. Now on to business. I was wondering if either you or Ruby have any ideas or thoughts about whether the downturn in the world economy has affected NCSoft or ArenaNet badly, and if the release date will have been pushed back because of it. Thanks, Sirius. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I assume he's talking about sales as far as Guild Wars. I find that, and not that I've done any extensive research, but I find that even in a bad economy, people will find a little bit of money here and there for their entertainment. Mm-hmm. Because even, I don't know, I guess when it's really, really bad, that's kind of when you need to treat yourself a little bit and cheer yourself up. And this is a very broad generalization.
Well, but, you're right, though. But what?
Well, it's... But I'm right. No, especially with all of these little NCSoft store items that they've been adding, between $5 and $15. I mean, between $5 and $15, that's a good amount for entertainment, for some fun when money's tight.
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing is whenever we have massively budget-related meetings and stuff, we always talk about how the economy is getting bad, and it's actually helping games. Because when you look at traditional entertainment, like going out to the movies, you take your family out to go to the movies, and you're spending $20, if you get like popcorn and all that stuff. And
that's like for one person.
I know. I was just going to say, you're like, I'm waiting for you to go, $20, what?
I'm coming to where your movie theater.
But yeah, I mean, it's expensive. So when you look at the fact that you can get a whole month of, an interactive social online, game for $15, for one account, I mean, that's a pretty good deal. Games in general, you could buy a game like Guild Wars for $50 at, it's not that much anymore, but, like a game like that, it's $50 at launch, and then it doesn't have a sub fee. there you go. I mean, you're set for however long you play it without paying anything extra. And I think that games also, from that kind of more of a generalization point of view, they're kind of escapist. You know, there's something you can escape into. I know many, many people who have had, and this isn't to say everybody's like this, but I've known many people who have had like social problems, you know, or like family problems or some type of, you know, financial problems, and they've, you know, kind of dove deeper into MMOs or games in general, and they've just kind of used it as a way to cope with, you know, what's going on around them that they're not enjoying. I mean, so I just think that if you take that into consideration, which of course, again, isn't the, you know, the case with everybody, you take that into consideration plus the fact that it's pretty cheap entertainment when you think about it, that's why games are doing so well. I mean, MMOs are skyrocketing still. They're still doing incredibly good. NCSoft, there's no way NCSoft is doing badly. I mean, if the thing is, like, when you look at the North American sales, you look at stuff like Ion, City of Heroes. Actually, City of Heroes is doing better, but you look at a few of their games like that. You know, Lineage 2, they're not really doing that great in North America. We, in North America, though, are a drop in the bucket of what NCSoft is capable of. In Asia, in Korea, they are gods. And I've probably said that on the show before, but they are absolute gods. I mean, they're doing better than ever. The top two games are Ion and Lineage 2 in Korea. And it's a much bigger market. Like, people go to places called PC Bongs, which are like LAN cafes, and they pay, you know, $1 to $2 an hour to play, and these places can hold 50 people. So the person who owns the PC Bong, you know, is making $50 an hour, you know, theoretically, and some of that money has to go to the publisher, of course. You know, I don't know how exactly all that works, but there's, you know, there's rights that have to be paid for to play the game and things like that. So they're not doing bad, I think, is an understatement. You know, they're doing really, really well in worldwide, and if you take that larger scope of things and you look outside of what they may be doing in North America, you know, it's just incredible. Now, if we go back to North America, you know, you look at ArenaNet is kind of their golden child of North America, you know, with the Guild Wars stuff. So they're not doing bad. You know, they're, like you said, they're selling things in the item shop, you know, all the costumes and things like that. So they're able to kind of maintain that budget. But at the same time, you know, NCSoft is their publisher. So NCSoft knows what they're capable of. You know, they know that they're continuously being voted the most, you know, the highest anticipated game, you know, of the next year or whenever they launch. So I think that they have the reputation, they have the faith in them. I don't see them going anywhere. I just think it's going to go up and up, you know.
Oh, I absolutely agree. And, you know, ArenaNet, if we just look at ArenaNet and Guild Wars, they have quite a few things working in their favor in this situation, too. They've been very, very smart about it. I was just looking on Steam while we were talking. The trilogy is $39.99 on Steam. And then that's it. I mean, you pay your $40, that's it. You've got the entire trilogy, and you're not going to pay anymore. Unless you want, you know, some of the little in-game store items. But you combine that with the enormous, enormous amount of hype on Guild Wars 2, and you're looking at this on Steam saying, hey, you can't play Guild Wars 2 yet, but even if you're not a Guild Wars fan, for $39.99 you can get these three games and get a jump on your Guild Wars 2 Hall of Monuments.
Yeah.
You know, all of that comes together. People are going to find that $40.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a
because it's a good value.
Yeah, it's a good value, and it's a pretty good setup they have there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Sirius, I think that I would say they're not doing badly at all. Again, though, you know, I'm talking about a lot of general stuff, and I don't know anything about, you know, the quarterly reports of NCSoft or ArenaNet or anything. Although, actually, the quarterly reports for NCSoft are probably public. But I just haven't really checked into that stuff.
Don't have them this minute.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine they're doing bad. I mean, I think NCSoft, the only part they might be doing bad for is the North American version of Ion. you know. But it's more than made up for over in Korea. So.
And actually, 2.5 might change that, but that's a whole other subject.
Yes, that's a whole different podcast.
Yes. Okay, moving on. Sorry.
Okay, so this next one, it says, "Hello, Sean and Ruby. Now that the book is official and you've had time to scream, I have a question.
Yay.
The only named mesmers in the book," and of course he's talking about Edge of Destiny, "are Jenna and Jormag's Dragonspawn. Could this mean mesmers are so overpowered only NPCs have this profession?
With
you regards, wish. Oh. Felidon Windlore."
Sorry. I couldn't help it.
No, I say no. Do not ever say that again. Do not repeat that.
I seriously doubt that. I think this is like the Necro thing. This is our mesmer confirmation, which at this point, the mesmer is kind of a duh thing. Oh, really? There's going to be it's just a question of when.
Yeah, I hope so. We talked a lot about that, though, in the Roundtable show, too.
But can I say the mesmer aura in Edge of Destiny was so cool? Okay, I'm dead. Sorry.
Okay.
You have to read this.
I know. Okay, this is next one. This is from Flipside. It says, "Hey, Guild Casties. There was a discussion on the Relics of War podcast a show or two back where they discussed new professions. Specifically, they spent some time on Blue Mace Lady. While the term never came up, they danced around the idea that the Lady with the Mace could be a heavy magic-wielding soldier class. What popped into my head? The old school battle mage. Granted, the flaming sword carrying earth armor elementalists or illusionary weapon mesmers weren't the best, but the idea was always a cool one. I think that's what we'll see. Magic to act as buffing defense and some spectacular offensive skills. They probably won't have magics as powerful as an Ellie and will have some sort of limitation, probably lacking ranged attacks. That's my two cents. Hope to see the return of the mesmer and a renamed assassin, thief, or corsair, perhaps." Ooh, corsair. That'd be cool. "My wish for the mystery profession is an engineer class, a summoner who spawns turret defense a la ritualist spirits. Happy Winter's Day, Flipside." Yeah, this was actually sent in before our roundtable. So he talks about Relics of War. But I think, I mean, he makes some good points here. A corsair, I didn't even think about that. You know, we did talk about the pirates, though, last episode. You know, the poofy shirt pirates.
Yeah.
But naming them corsair, that's actually interesting. I like that.
That would be kind of fun. And I'm trying to remember what exactly, when everything went to pieces in Alona. In the Guild Wars 2 lore. But now I want to go read up on that and see if that would fit in nicely with the Corsairs we know now.
Yeah. That would be interesting. Well, flip side, if they do make that, you called it right here. We have it recorded.
We got it recorded.
Okay, his next one. This is a long one. Oh, this is a really long one. This one is from, let me scroll all the way to the bottom, okay? I'm keep going. Okay. Ken from Chicago.
He says,
"One great roundtable with Relics of War." This was sent after the roundtable, of course. "After Logan's run in Edge of Destiny, I'm like Ruby in disliking Logan." Uh-oh. Is that a spoiler?
Big one.
Uh-oh. Spoiler alert. Don't, if you heard that, just ignore it. Okay. "3, I disagree about the profession reveal wowness. ArenaNet doesn't have to reveal the new profession now to wow fans." That's not World of Warcraft fans, that's wow fans.
Yeah.
Because what happens afterward, all they need to do is show how the old profession has been upgraded, a la the LE Warrior, Ranger, and Necro, and then show new professions. Speaking of which, and now, and then he has a little breakdown of the final four. This is what he thinks.
Okay.
His picks for the final four. In light of Eric Flanham's ArenaNet post of when profession reveals being made, when it's ready, I thus issue this caveat that barring extra time needed to work out the play mechanics in a particular profession, this would be ArenaNet's preferred release schedule. To speculate on the future, the final four professions to be revealed for Guild Wars 2, we need to meditate on the past, the first four professions, and what has been revealed about the professions overall. And also look at the game style each brings to the table. Okay, This is a very detailed breakdown here, but I'm just going to kind of go over the main points here.
Okay.
It says there would be 8 professions, 3 scholars, lightly armored, 3 adventurers, mediumly armored. Mediumly?
It's a word.
And 2 soldiers, heavily armored. So we have the elementalist, which is a scholar, game-style attunement, and then he's got a description here. Warrior, which is the soldier, game-style weapon master. Ranger, which is the adventurer, game-style pets. Necromancer, which is a scholar, game-style death shroud, right? So that's what we have. Now, he's saying for the future, to kind of fill in the rest of the, you know, the parts here, we got mesmer, which is also scholar, game-style influence. Monk, which would be an adventurer, game-style unarmed. Now, that's like we were talking about with the DDO monk. And then he says, thus ended the reveal of the old professions onto the reveal of the two new ones. And he says that they will be called a scout, which is an adventurer class, and the game style is stealth, which we've talked about would be really cool. And then a bard, or maybe a seraph, which would be a soldier, game style buffs. So that would be like the buffer. I think I like his ideas here, and like I said, he's got a lot written on each one, like a paragraph or two on each one. But I like the fact, I mean, I like the scout. I think that would be, that's a pretty interesting one, because it's about, it's not so much about, you know, the assassin version of stealth, mm-hmm. but it's more of like a rogue type, I guess you would say. And then the bard with the buffs, I think that would be, but the only thing here is, what about the blue mace lady and the dude with the 2 swords? You know what I mean?
I do, and this is why I get to this point. Every time I try to think about this, I get to this point, and I just throw my hands up. I'm like, I'll wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think if, like, people from Arena that are listening to this, and they're probably like, you guys are overthinking it. Like, it's not that, you know.
We are, and it's broken my brain. I just can't even process anymore. I'm just kind of sitting in the corner in the fetal position waiting for an announcement.
I like also in that retrospective video, I think somebody said that they, when they were asking who they were going to play, they said that they named the, I think they said Savari or something, and then they said a class that has not yet been named.
Chris lied because people were ready to kill him.
That's right, Chris, yeah. He's like teasing us.
It was me. And he did it on purpose. Did you see the look on his face? He was like, haha.
Oh, yeah, I would have done that too. Totally. Okay, let's go on this next email then. This is from Lucas, and it says, hello, Sean and Ruby. It's been a while since the last time I played Guild Wars 1. I bought it just because of the price model, many thanks to ArenaNet. I hate the subscription model. And because of the Assassin class. But I also have some experience as a feral druid tank in World of Warcraft, and I can't really comprehend the mentality of energy in Guild Wars 2. Again, I can't really remember if there was such a distinction in Guild Wars 1 with the tank, crowd control, healer, and DPS, but how is it supposed to work in Guild Wars 2 when you can't really tank because you would just burn your energy? I understand that they want to do something different, but how are you supposed to heal the tank? How are you supposed to tank at all? I wouldn't want this game to be some simple arcade where everyone just spams offensive skills, and it doesn't matter if they die. Like, no tank equals a lot of dead people. If this should be like that, everyone has to watch out for the damage. Then I'm afraid it might be too chaotic to handle a big group of people. Thank you for the podcast. The round table discussion is great, Lucas. Well, you want to take this one?
Well, this is another one where I can't, I feel like I can't speculate and say, well, the mechanics will work like this, this, and this, and this is how they will get around not being able to have a traditional tank. Because who knows? I mean, we don't really have any clue. All I can say to that is that they've had a lot of people playing at one time. Mm-hmm. And they've had some huge battles going on. I mean, they said in the retrospective, ArenaNet, they've been playing this game for 3 years. Mm-hmm. They've had 3 years to work all this out. So I can only assume that they have. I just don't know how yet.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think we really have anything to worry about. I think that's what you're saying too, you know.
Yeah, but they've had, I mean, even in the demos at PAX and Gamescom, what did they have, 40? 40-some-odd people playing at the same time. And granted, they weren't all in the same place, but they had some pretty sizable groups of people, plus the ArenaNet staff back at the offices. Heck, in the retrospective, they said there were like 250 people that worked there. And I'm sure they weren't all playing, but a lot... You had a fair amount of the fan base and a fair amount of the staff all playing at the same time. So this has been done, and somehow it's going to work.
We just have to have faith, right?
Well, and hope to God that they don't screw it up.
Okay, so let's go on to this next email here. This is from Ken, a different Ken from the other one. Hey, Sean. Hey, no mention of Ruby. Oh, we got these separately, right?
I got my own email.
You got one that said, hey, Ruby.
Yeah. So at least this guy. Thank you, Ken.
So, hey, Sean, first of all, congratulations to you and Sarah on your engagement. Oh, thank you. I just finished listening to the first roundtable episode, and I must say that I was very happy with the medley of opinions on the show. I just wanted to comment on the state of elementalist AoE spells and other classes spells that deal massive AoE damage, which triggers the AI to run away like a bunch of frightened schoolgirls. You guys had mentioned bringing knockdowns and warriors with knockdowns to get the best effectiveness out of a nuke. I've been doing a lot of DOA speed clears lately, and we've had a lot of success with the with a high Ebon Vanguard rank and tryptophan signet. We use it before our spikes, and it holds clusters of enemies in an area for a long while. Old news, I'm sure, but I thought it would be worth pointing out. Oh, cool. Ebon Vanguard, I love that.
Oh my gosh, I have so much fun with that.
Because of Skippy. I love Skippy.
I do, you know, too.
Do people still call it Skippy?
It's in the wiki.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, I think I knew that.
Yeah, I think I told you that quite a while back. Let me see.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
Let's see, Guild Wars wiki and
for anyone who doesn't know, Skippy was invented. The name Skippy was invented by someone who used to do a segment on the show, Jenna. She did a segment on the old Guildcast, and she did a whole like skit on the Ebon Vanguard assassin, you know, and she called him Skippy. She's like, "Send out Skippy," and it was a great little thing, and it just caught on. And it's so funny that it kind of started with her.
It's gone from the wiki.
Oh, is it?
It used to redirect.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember you showed me that, and I couldn't believe it. Somebody needs to put it back.
I know. I'm sad. I'm, like, looking for it. I mean, I'm seriously trying to find it now.
And then, well, Ken has a spoiler here at the end. What do you think? You think we should read that? You think it's too spoilerific about Edge of Destiny?
Crap. Wait, let me see.
No, I don't think it's too... No.
I can't remember what it was, so...
Oh, okay. See, what he says is, possible spoilers. Also, did anyone else who read Edge of Destiny notice a good 3 to 4 distinctly new classes which have not been announced yet? I'd go into more detail, but do not want to spoil the book for people who have not read it. I'll write a follow-up email if I get the green light from you guys. No, don't tell us, because I don't want to know.
There were some hints.
At 3 to 4 new classes? Like, in addition to the ones that we already...
Oh, I don't know about 3 to 4. That was maybe pushing it a little bit. I know what he's talking about, and I can think of the incidents and the people that he's talking about. Might be reaching with a couple of them.
Is it like, is it something that might be possibly playable, or is it like the bar in Star Wars where there's just like one of everything?
See, that's... That's the question.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if I had to say that it was deliberately vague.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know. I can kind of I can meet him halfway on that and say, I guess I can see that, but not all of it.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't want to say too much.
You know what though? I'll distract everybody by saying that guildwiki.org Skippy redirects to Ebon Vanguard Assassin Support.
Oh, okay.
So, it's the unofficial wiki that does it. Anyway, so there you go. I changed the subject beautifully.
Nice job.
Thank you. Thanks for the email, Ken.
Okay, so on to the next one here. This is from Flipside again. It says, "Hi guys, wanted to point out a post on the Hunter's Insight blog." And then he's got a link to that. He says, it does a good job of laying out the case for the next profession reveal being the Guardian, and I totally agree. As Ruby pointed out, the last book told us flat out that necromancers were a Guild Wars 2 profession, and then we had the reveal. I think we can pretty much say the same with this class. Also, I've been spending time vanquishing Encantha, just finished, and I noted that Lucas is a Guardian henchman. So the term has been around for a while. That's true. Lucas is a Guardian henchman.
Yeah.
If we can just get some info on the swashbuckling pew-pew illusionary mesmers and the turret deploying steampunk engineers. Later, flip side. I would love those, too. I would definitely love a steampunk engineer and a illusionary mesmer swashbuckling. That'd be awesome. Little flintlock pistol, like I said last time. Yeah, that would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. I can't even speculate anymore. It breaks my brain.
So what about the Guardian, though?
I don't know.
We'll put a link to that in the show notes so people can check that out. Hunter's Insight blog, it's a really good blog, Guild Wars blog, that if you haven't read it yet, you should check it out. He's another one who plays in Minecraft with us in the multiplayer with Tiger Feet. And it's funny because there's like, it's like a little group of bloggers on there.
We have our little corner.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll put a link to that in the show notes. Hopefully, let me write that down.
I just did.
Okay, good. Okay.
Please don't forget.
And so this last email here, this is this is from Mr. Funktastic. I always like saying that.
I know. I get excited when he writes because it's a cool name.
Because you get to hear me say it, right?
Mm-hmm. Say it again.
Mr. Funktastic.
Woo! Okay,
it says, hey, Rubon. It's a combination of Ruby and Sean.
I like Urban Wish better.
I combined your names to show that I have no preference when it comes to you two, and that you guys are an awesome Guild Wars podcasting entity. Okay, enough brown nosing. That's what he says, actually. I was reading a thread in Guild Wars 2 Guru, and people were speculating on the character creation and customization in Guild Wars 2. Someone made a comment on how creating Norn with a dark skin tone wouldn't make sense lore-wise, due to the fact that Norn are from a cold region where people often have lighter skin. I myself think that the lore shouldn't be taken to such an extreme extent where simple features and character creation are unavailable. I'd love to hear your guys' opinion. This reminds me of things like, like in Lotro, when you make the different types of elves or hobbits or dwarves, you get, and this happens in a lot of other games too, but you get like a different set of colors that you can use for skin tone and hair tone and stuff like that. And it's based on, a lot of that is based on Tolkien, you know, how he said that, like, you know, the branch of the hobbits, the moors, something like that.
Anyway. I was still stuck on elves. I was going drow?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a good example. The drow elves, you know, are darker, mm-hmm. White hair, and I think it's all up to how it's written. You know, if it's written into the storyline like that, then it would make sense to play it like that. But if you're at a point now where, here's my thoughts on this, you know, you're at a point in the Guild Wars history where there's this big event that happened, you know, the Char invasion and Orr sunk to the ground and, you know, all this stuff. So, and we're 250 years later. I think that even they've said in the starter areas, you'll see all of the races in the starter areas. So I think it's kind of everything is integrated to the point where I don't think it really matters. You know, there's no, one skin tone that's in one certain area anymore. You know what I mean? I would think that everything is kind of mixed enough over time to where that's not really an issue. And I don't know if that's... Do you know if that's play... If that is a part of the storyline at all in the lore?
That... I think skin tone in the way that he's talking about, like humans would have different skin tones that were racially decided. But this made me think of something interesting in the book, in Edge of Destiny, in that Jorah went to Lion's Arch and saw and was talking to another Norn, and he was a sea captain. He was, you know, like ocean going, and he was going on and on about how pale her skin was.
Oh. Okay.
And he was like, "You got to get some color like me. You know, get out of the north and get out on the ocean and get some color in your cheeks." And he really made a big point about the huge difference in their skin tones and how much darker he was.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of interesting in context, and I have no idea if they're related or not, but...
Actually, yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, it sounds like that, you know how ArenaNet sneaks little things like that in?
Mm-hmm.
It seems like maybe that was in there for the kind of make up for the fact, or what am I trying to say? Explain the fact that, you know, you can have a wide variety of color in your skin and everything.
Yeah, so that was... I think what he was saying, it was just kind of funny the way he did it, because he said, I've never seen a woman so fair, and I'm talking about both your facial features and your skin tone. Why are you so white? And it wasn't exactly like that, but it was a funny little exchange. And she's like, what are you talking about? I just look normal.
Huh. Yeah, so I think maybe that sounds like a, kind of a way to explain something like that. You know, I mean, there's always something. I tend to look at this as not really that important, because any of that can be explained away.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, who knows what, you know, any of the skin tone from each direction of the equator, you know, anywhere you go in the world can be different at any time. So is there an equator in Tyria? I don't even know. It's,
if there's not, there should be.
We'll have to ask Jeff Grubb sometime. we'll have an interview. Number one question: is there an equator in Tyria?
We need to know. It's important for the skin tone sliders in Guild Wars 2. It's relevant.
Yeah, but I would imagine that they're going to have a wide variety. I mean, character customization is about making it how you want to, you know, and how you see yourself and how you see your character. And that I don't, you know, it shouldn't be limited like that. It seems like, in, you know, the technical capabilities that we can do now with character creation, you know, we had it in Guild Wars 1, but it was like select which box you want, you know, out of like 8 different colors, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I would imagine that it would be a lot more varied this time.
I really hope so, because Guild Wars characters are so beautiful, even as they stand now. And I can't wait to see what they can do with advanced character creation in light of how gorgeous they are just with the limited character creation we have now.
Yeah, yeah. The fact that it's even being argued in a forum, I mean, everything is argued in a forum, so.
Well, yeah, hi.
That's the point of forums, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's about all we had for this time, wasn't it?
Was that all of our email?
Oh. Yeah, that was all of them. But I think everybody should write more so that we'll have more to read next week, don't you?
Please.
And how would we do that? Oh, yeah. Email to Sean. How's that for a segue?
Nice.
Email to Sean at guildcast.com. That's S-H-A-W-N at guildcast.com. And also Ruby, R-U-B-I, at guildcast.com. You could do it separately, together, you could blind CC me or her or, you know, whatever you want to do. Just mix it up. also, we have Twitter, which is just twitter.com/guildcast. We have a little Facebook group. And then we have the main page, which is at guildcast.com or guildcast.wordpress.com. And let's see. I think that's about it, right?
I think that's plenty.
So next week is the Mesmer reveal. And then... What?
You know, by the time I'm just thinking that by the time the Mesmer is actually revealed, it's going to be like muscle memory, and you won't be able to stop saying it at the end of every podcast.
Or when they do reveal it, and I say it, I'll be like, see, I told you. I was right. I knew it.
What did I say?
I totally guessed it. All right, so until next week, this is Sean.
I'm Ruby.
And we'll talk to you then.